Welcome to the monthly meeting of the Humanist Union of Madison for November 2009. Our speaker today is Julie Merrill Quinn, a native Madisonian who describes herself as a politically active atheist. Julie?
I've spent the last 2 months working with just trying to figure out what is involved in our health care on the federal level, what our Senate and House of Representatives are trying to accomplish. We keep hearing about public options and no public options, and it sounds like they are pretty much on the sides of pharmaceuticals and insurance companies instead of representing the people that they were elected to. I found that it's very difficult to get a concrete answer, and at this point there are two different bills in the Senate that they're going to try to combine, that they will combine into one bill, and there's a House bill that is just one House bill, and then all those will be combined into one bill. So you can see how long this process and how drawn out it is. Things that I have discovered, though, is that most of the things that are being legislated now will not even take effect for 4 or 5 years, 2013. Of particular interest to me, because my mother is 91, was the Medicare D, which is for pharmaceuticals, and their plan is to close the donut hole over a period of 15 years, which doesn't seem to even allow for inflation. It's in the Affordable Health Care for America Act, which is in the House, and that what they will do, though, is reduce, institute a 50% discount on brand name drugs effective January 1st, 2010. And this is the answer to this situation. Usually you don't have a large pool of people and don't negotiate the price of the care. And in this case, the amount of your allotment for Medicare D will go much further if you're only paying, if you're not paying a retail price for your medications. So if they enact this, if this passes, which I encourage everyone to contact legislators regarding this, would be a House bill, so your representative in the House, that you support this measure, most people probably wouldn't even hit the donut hole because their allotment of their $2,000 allotment would go that much further to cover their medications. You can find all of these different things online, but at this point, they're going to just be, they're kind of floating in limbo right now. They're not really, anything's finalized. The one thing of interest to us, as far as a religious nature went, when I got the action alert from the Secular Coalition of America, was that the Christian Scientist practitioners get reimbursed through Medicare and Medicaid for praying. And this is a current existing law. And what the Carrie Hatch amendment to the Senate bill, and this would be the Baucus bill, is that they want to expand that for everyone, which means that if you're a Christian Scientist, your insurance carrier, your private insurance carrier, or whatever public option would be there, would have to provide for a practitioner, a prayer practitioner. And if you have this handout from Freedom from Religion Foundation, back in 1989, a Christian Science practitioner charged $446 for 2 days of prayer treatment for a Minnesota boy with diabetes who eventually died of his complications. This would greatly, the fact that this would, we're paying for something that for most of us would assume it's not much more than waving a wand over somebody and assume they're going to survive whatever illness they have, especially treatable illnesses like diabetes. The other side of this...
Is that the House or the Senate bill?
That's in the Senate. Okay. That's in the Senate. And the interesting part about that is I contacted Senator Feingold's office and they could not find where this amendment... What happens is amendments have to be approved. And then they determine which ones are going to be included, and there's literally hundreds of them. If an amendment doesn't have any opposition, it goes right on through. And I was told that Senator Kerry is a very powerful senator, and Christian Scientists are based in Boston, and so they're his constituency, which is, because I was wondering why he was supporting this, and that's the reason. When I contacted Secular Coalition to find out if they knew if that had been included, they were not aware of it. They were assuming it's going to be included just based on the power of Kerry alone. And this would be included for, you know, all Christian Scientist practitioners can get reimbursed no matter, you know, this is going to just be part of the law. And I guess if we want to protest these kinds of things, you have to let your legislators know. As difficult as dealing with political issues is, you still have to contact them and tell them where you stand. I've attended a number of different, for different purposes, and your legislator, he knows, one, if you vote, he doesn't know how you vote, but he can check the records and see if you voted. And oftentimes they will say that they never heard from anybody regarding an issue, so they vote the way they think they should vote. Usually if they hear from, you know, people will be outraged about something, but nobody ever contacts them, and that's what they listen to. They do listen to their constituents. I think the something that we can do that's a little closer to home is Wisconsin actually has a faith exception legislation, and this is put out. This was you have a handout here, and it's LRB 2190, and it was authored by Therese Brousseau, who's the 76th Assembly District. Mm-hmm. She's from the Madison area. She's a Democrat. And what this would do, I gave you a copy of the bill itself. It's actually an act. What it would do is it would remove the faith exception for children. If you are a Christian Scientist adult, you can pray all you want. But what it does is just for children, it's considered, it's if you go through the history, and I was doing quite a bit of research, there's letters back from 1987 from the Christian Science Committee. And the state of Wisconsin accepted verbatim what they wanted in the act that removes, that gives them the faith exception. So that's what they listen to. And we have there's a counter bill, and that's by that's LRB 1147 by Senator Lena Taylor. She's the fourth Senate. She's a senator, state senator, fourth Senate district from Milwaukee, also a Democrat. And she has been. It keeps the faith exception for children. This has widespread report by many Christian groups. And you have to remember, it's not just Christian Scientists that believe in prayer. There's lots of other groups. Jehovah's Witnesses don't believe in transfusions, etc. They write lots of letters of support. I guess I would just like everybody to take this sheet and use it as an action item to contact your legislator and tell them that you support this bill. There is no one in the Senate right now that is a co-sponsor, and they need a Senate co-sponsor for this to go anywhere. When I talked to the assistant in Therese Brousseau's office, they said it's going to be an uphill battle. Currently, 39 states have a faith exception. It's hard to believe in 2009 that people can legally be allowed to kill their children. And, of course, this was based on the recent Kara Newman case where she was undiagnosed diabetic and was not treated for many months, and eventually succumbed to her diabetes. And her parents tried for her death, and they received a 6-month sentence, which is to be served 1 month a year for 6 years, and which is hardly a punishment most of us would consider. The other, I guess the way I see it too, is that if you, these are, it's basically saying that Christians have a separate, you know, the government is very dangerously close to saying that Christians are a protected religion. Because if you were probably a Satanist and you decided that your child had demons in him and withheld food from him, chances are you probably would be tried for child abuse on that case. One of the interesting things, there's a lot of interesting writings by Sean Francis Peters. He's at the university, and he wrote a book about praying and children dying through through the whole, you know, fact that their parents only choose prayer. And he said that far more children die in the name of God than in the name of Satan. Everybody thinks Satanists, and you know, everybody's had these, you know, visions. But the other side of this is so many children, so many women that don't get any kind of prenatal care and give birth to these children that either die during childbirth. A lot of them are breech deliveries. And they no one ever investigates what happened to these children. This is a kind of a, you know, nationwide situation and problem with a lot of these communities where, I mean, there was just another case where a child died in, I think, Oregon. Has a lot of people that practice. It's not Christian Scientists, but it's another type of faith healing kind of thing. But if, I guess what I would suggest everybody in the group do is contact your legislators and tell them that, you know, you support Therese Brousseau's bill. If you can, write letters. Letters to the editor. The opposition always has a lot of people that will write. They need to hear. They don't have to be very elaborate or anything, but, you know, if we can get some, you know, some print out there that this is, in this day and age, this is, you know, what we've done is we've created, you know, the separate entity for, I mean, anybody, any of the rest of us would be charged with child neglect or child abuse and would probably go to prison for a long time. The Newmans could have gone to prison for 25 years. And a one-month, a year sentence for 6 years is hardly... And the other side of their situation, too, is they still have not admitted any wrongdoing. They think they've done nothing wrong.
I read their website, and at no time did they say they were sorry. Mm-mm. They're sorry for themselves.
Yeah.
They're very sorry for themselves, but they're not sorry at all for the fact they killed that child.
Mm-mm. No, none of most of them are not. Most of them, there was a case in I was reading in Sean's book, a child that had undiagnosed hemophilia, and he'd stepped on a glass or something, and basically bled to death. Well, his parents did nothing. They called in a practitioner, and taking him to the hospital would have saved his life. They feel that their philosophy is that a child is just here temporarily for you to raise, and if they die, God's taking them back. I mean, it's kind of hard to, you know, in some ways you can kind of like zero in on what they're thinking, but the other time another person that's very familiar with Christian Science is Rita Swan, who has her own group called Child, and she lost a child to bacterial meningitis through Christian Science. I've heard her speak to Freedom from Religion Foundation, and she said that the issue is that on the one hand, the Christian scientists want you to pray, but then if the child dies, you have no recourse. It's not like there's any kind of prayer malpractice you can file against them. So it's they basically want to, you know, deny that they are responsible for the child dying. And it's
on the other hand, they said that if you take your child to a doctor and what he prescribes fails, you don't sue him, and he doesn't go. He might sue him, but he doesn't go to prison. So they say this is just another thing. You go to a chiropractor, you go to a doctor, and they can do all sorts of odd things. And they're not what they consider to be persecuted, but mm-hmm. yet they're singled out for persecution where they feel what they're doing is as valid
right.
as anything else.
I know. I know. When you look at their arguments, you can see why no state wants to take them on. I mean, it's very difficult to, you know,
line.
Yeah, the loopholes and how much it's like, you can have juries where they're just not going to convict this parent. I mean, the parent is very sorry that their child died, and they feel like they did do something, even though they didn't seek medical care. They felt that, you know, by bringing somebody in to pray over them was doing something. It wasn't like they just ignored the fact entirely.
Well, you get into aromatherapy, and you get into all these things that feel that they are, you know, doing a valid thing, and yet people die. And I don't know, it's very hard to draw a line, I think.
Well, I think that was the other thing when I talked to... I'm still waiting for some callbacks from some of the contacts I'd made through... specifically, I talked to somebody in Tammy Baldwin's office about the Christian Science being reimbursed for prayer. The only reason they're reimbursed is because they're the only group, you know, like I said, well, what's wrong with Lutheran prayer? And they said, well, Lutherans go to doctors, so obviously their prayer is secondary to medical care. And that's why they don't utilize medical services. This is their quote unquote medical service, and that's why. But she said it also opens up the whole, you know, if you want to call it woo woo, all the other groups that are, you know, also claim to have a lot of curative powers and stuff. So it's going to be interesting how this is ever going to kind of pan out, you know, when we finally get a bill. There's no time frame on when they're going to ever get this done. So good luck with all of us.
Well, they're going to keep working on it.
Yeah, they keep working on it. It keeps them, I guess it's called, you know, job, you know.
I have security. A thought about how to utilize this in the context of the question, when does human life begin? And you might redefine the beginning of human life when a fetus or an infant makes connection with human caregivers that are capable of raising it in the cultural and healthful conditions of humanity. And so in this case, here is a child for whom human life had not yet begun.
Well, I went too, because I went to a chiropractor, Madison Chiropractic, got a big full page ad and the yellow pages, and that guy said that he had the knack that he could put his hands on me and he could feel the energy flowing. Mm-hmm. And as he was doing this, he would go, oh! Actually, he did a pretty good job, but I couldn't stand much more than that. But he did feel that he had some sort of power, and the energy would flow. And I thought, well, what is that then? That's faith healing.
I know the lawyer that became the lobbyist for the Chiropractic Association in Wisconsin, because for numbers of years, it's probably been about maybe 20 years now, that chiropractic was never covered by insurance. And they basically, it was kind of a, by the time they sued or whatever, they went to court over it, it was pretty kind of a no-brainer that they were going to be able to be reimbursed for this. If you look at, Tony said, the lawyer said, well, some of the much older chiropractors believe they could cure your cancer and all kinds of stuff through chiropractic, but a lot of the younger, newer chiropractors did not believe that that was possible. But they still believe that, you know, there's a certain energy in the spine and whatever else they do.
They don't all believe that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they don't. This guy was an exception.
Yeah, the scientific, I mean, manipulating to break up adhesions is
this guy was exceptional.
Perfectly sound stuff. It's just mm-hmm. got all of this other stuff mm-hmm. around it that wasn't so sound.
Mm-hmm. I finally said, we can't keep doing this forever. And he said, why not? He had never been turned down from Medicare. Yeah, I could have gone on. I could have gone there every week forever. And mm-hmm. Why not?
Well, it's very self-serving.
Yeah.
Well, making a living that way. So.
I didn't.
I just saw this is kind of sort of in the topic and sort of out. The recent People magazine had, from November 9th, had the people that died in this sweat lodge by this New Age guru, James Arthur Ray. If you look at this picture, you think, how can any sane person go into this thing? Mm-hmm. They had 60 people in there, and it was 3 feet. It was 30 inches high at the edges and only 53 inches high in the center. And it was in the desert where it was, you can read about what how they all went into this thing. And people were just, there was no oxygen in there for them to breathe. You think, well, how can a sane person follow this guy in here? But then you read about him and it said, he claims he began his career as a world thought leader. After wandering the Sinai Desert for 10 days, he created his own philosophy, Harmonic Wealth, which calls for confronting fears, and since 1999 has written a bestseller and appeared in the widely popular self-help movie, The Secret, also widely promoted by Oprah Winfrey. According to Inc. magazine, Ray's company earned $9.4 million in 2008 alone from books, DVDs, and seminars, and prior to that, he was a telemarketer. So when you look at basically, you know, you would think intelligent people following somebody to their death. I guess
adults, and this is quite different
Well, it is, but I mean,
I
know, but I mean, obviously Christian Scientist has adults that don't get medical care either, but I mean, you know, it is, it's different, but the fact that people will follow someone basically with no any background other than something he made up in his head, then I mean, I guess I haven't done a lot of research on Mary Baker Eddy, but her whole philosophy was that Christian Scientist healers should charge the same as a physician.
Mm. So, did you know that the front office in Boston had a telephone at her graveside for a generation after her passing in case she came back?
In case she called back. I wonder if that would have been a collect call.
There's a sweat lodge at the federal prison at Oxford. Because the American Indians, a lot of the people in Oxford are American Indians because those state crimes on reservations are federal crimes.
Okay.
And so they do, in their freedom of religion, they have a sweat lodge. And it doesn't look like much either. It's just a bunch of cardboard and stuff.
They probably know better than the state liberal.
Well, yeah, it's not in the desert either. Where
it's
temperatures
not
like, American. Yeah.
It's just interesting.
Right.
It was interesting to me that they were able to do that.
Well, did they do it for spiritual reasons?
Well, they do it because they demand that they have that, and it's a spiritual thing, and that's where it comes from the Native Americans somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where that idea comes. And I don't know anything about the philosophy, I just know the thing was there, and what I have, it was there.
Well, I looked at this picture, and I went, well, there's a reason I'm claustrophobic. You've never gotten me in this contraption.
Are there federal or state laws on medical quackery that make it illegal to falsely claim that you can heal someone with a device or something like that?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there must be. I mean, Dr. McGillicuddy's,
But you can write a book that says that apricot pits cure cancer, and they don't, and you don't get sued.
But if you put that on the bottle and sell it as a medicine,
Maybe that's a different book. So
actually, if you call it alternative medicine,
you
then you don't have a bottle.
Then you can put anything you want on it. There was a very strong lobby that got the exception.
Just go down to the nurse.
With the Food and Drug Administration, labels, controls all the drugs, but if it's an alternate.
Well, most herbs are not controlled.
Right.
By
there was a very strong lobby that got that exception so that they can claim whatever they want.
No, they can't claim that it treats. They can hint.
Yes.
They can suggest, in other words.
Yeah.
Just go down to some of the local stores that have a big range of those herbal medicines and just look at them for... look critically, look at them, read the labels, and maybe Google some of them and find out what some of the medical research is and on the effects of some of the chemicals that are in those. A lot of them are toxic.
Oh,
I think
toxic.
The good news is more is being done on that. I think there's a lot more research. I think scientists were so quick to... poo-poo a lot of things just because they were, quote, alternative, or, quote, from out of the country or not part of standard Western medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the good news is that we're beginning to filter that out. I mean, after all, how many of us in this room have taken aspirin?
Mm-hmm.
And where does that come from? I mean,
there's
a lot of healing that is... Western medicine as it's come from this sort of
thing. Germany has done a wonderful job. They've got a whole formulary. The problem that you have in this country... is it may say it's, say, glucosamine on the bottle. That doesn't guarantee you that there's one drop of that in the bottle.
They waived
a... Because the FDA doesn't have... Because
the FDA, right.
Right.
So,
it says what it says.
So you may find something that works that you can read in the German formulary, but there's no guarantee that you can buy it here or buy it in the strength that they tested it in because... there's no control. I mean, you kind of have to go through and get companies that you think maybe are legitimate and you trust, but there is absolutely no legal recourse if it's...
Mm-hmm.
And you think the qualified manufacturer in preparations would want the FDA to be involved, so that the preparations could be guaranteed.
But but the ones who are not legitimate are the ones who are.
Now that I think the newest thing though is you when there's a lot of public service things out there that tell people to tell their doctor everything they're taking, including herbals, mm-hmm. because sometimes like before you have surgery, some of the herbals you're taking can really interfere with anesthesia and
or bleeding.
Yeah, bleeding, clotting, all that stuff. Yeah, so it's definitely important. But people think because it's a plant, it's perfect and wonderful, but. We still can't get that medical marijuana thing, although they're not going to prosecute now.
The distinction between herbals and alternative medicines and legitimate medicines is rather recent. Digitalis mm-hmm. was first purified early in my medical career, and it became much less dangerous because it was purified and weighed out. And the dose was the same from one batch to another. Mm-hmm. Prior to that time, the dose of digitalis was in cat units. And a cat unit is the dose that kills 50% of the cats which take it. And that was the best they could do because it hadn't been purified enough to weigh it out.
They couldn't try it out. They couldn't see if it killed 50% of the humans.
And
100
cats.
Well, whatever.
The number of cats will nail it down, but it might take 500 or 1,000. But the history of this thing is that stuff like belladonna is quite a list of them, quinine. They were much easier to purify and weigh out. And so herbal remedies that are untested have actually been tested and found wanting because it was such an open season to go and track down these chemicals. After World War, have you ever heard of Lecithin? It was a drug used for high blood pressure and psychiatric purposes. And it was from an herb from India. And it was actually purified and utilized. But it's no longer utilized because there are other remedies that are so much better.
Less side effects.
So the final solution with modern methods, any actually effective remedy doesn't have to remain in this alternative category. It can be purified or synthesized and made into measurable doses that are consistent from one batch to another. And so the drug companies have been looking for new sources.
Have they? Yes,
and,
you have.
And it's been pretty well worked over.
And there's a problem, too. I know in Paraguay, what they call remedios, which are these herbs and stuff, and there'll be just lines of them in the market. And they say now people are sending, Germans and people into the rainforest, and they're trying to find these things. And when they find them, then they want to synthesize them, and then they want to patent them.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Brazilians are saying, hey, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. You can't come in. These are ours. Mm-hmm. And you take them, and then you synthesize them, and you stiff us. So it's a big problem. But a lot of those remedios work. And nobody really knows why, but if you live in Paraguay and you got sick, and your neighbor will bring over some tea, and sure as hell, sometimes it works.
Well, that's kind of like the homeopathic groups.
Well, no,
mm-hmm. That's not the same.
Really did have chemical activity.
Sure.
Chemical activity. And question becomes, when it's purified, then is it patentable, or is there some right to those people who then
indigenous people. That's exactly what the problem is.
That's what they're exploring, what the rights of those people are.
There's a big difference between native herbal treatments and homeopathic industry, where they take this theory about energy and these things, and then they say it gets stronger as we dilute it, and they dilute it and dilute it and dilute it as one
molecule of the
action. Right. When there's not even one molecule, possibly less, it's still supposed to be good.
They say that the water has a memory of what used to be there.
And I don't know if homeopathic. I'm thinking that from what I was told that those types of things will be included. You know, when it first came out, I was an administrator for the Section 125 cafeteria plan, where you could put money aside tax-free and then get reimbursed for child care and then medical things. And we did reimburse people that use homeopathic, like if you were going to go work in your garden, you would take some tincture before you went out and mm-hmm. dug in the dirt because it would keep you from having any allergic reactions or whatever. But they would take little bits of medicine, whatever they were called, and they would have literally hundreds of these little things that they would get reimbursed for, and we reimbursed them for those things.
But it was their money, and all they were saving was the tax on that money.
Yeah, they were saving the tax.
That harks to the scams that there was a public radio, public television program on it not long ago. A lot of people who are claiming that they're offering services to, selling stuff to, Medicare patients, and they're falsifying records, and they're not actually selling the stuff, but they're billing Medicare. And there was when was that program? Some of you probably saw it. It was on the mm-hmm. Lara or
something. All the fraud
recently.
That goes on.
Yeah. And we're talking about billions of dollars mm-hmm. of fraud, which we're paying for as taxpayers, because it's coming out of the Medicare funds. And these people mm-hmm. getting reimbursed. But it would seem to me that people could be doing the same thing with these so-called remedies of various sorts. They're quack remedies, whether they're something they're taking orally or whatever, or some sort of a magnetic device, you know, whatever.
And something that has not been that long ago put on the market by some people as ozone generators, because
yeah.
they
yes.
claim that this is going to benefit you, whereas mm-hmm. as an air pollution, you're a little bit more control ground level ozone because it harms people.
There's a long history in this.
Ozone's a special case because in the stratosphere it intercepts ultraviolet light, which is a plus.
It's a valuable thing up in the stratosphere where it helps reduce skin cancer. But we don't go up there to breathe it.
I know on the books, I wrote a book and it had to do with logging and felling trees. And just before I was going to publish it, I said, I'm not going to do this because some lawyer is going to, it's a dangerous business. And some lawyer is going to do exactly what I said in that book, and he's going to end up in a wheelchair with a lot of time, and he's going to hound me. And I'm going to lose it, me and Evans. So I went to the publisher, Chelsea Green, and I said, no, I withdraw it, I won't do it. And they said that they would stand behind me. They said that there's always been no case where anybody has written a book about anything like this and ever got sued. They said that the freedom of speech is so strong that it protects you just by that.
Was it published anyway?
Well, yeah, I wanted to publish it anyway. I wanted somebody to tell me, yes. And I did, and nobody's ever sued me. But
did you put a giant disclaimer in there? And
oh, sure, you put the disclaimer. Everybody does that.
Is it a certain limitation? So if that book's been out there for a certain number of years?
I just sold it to Chelsea Green, and it's still available on
Amazon
and Chelsea Green. And so it's still there, and like I said, I don't know if anybody ever got hurt by it or not, but that's a pretty bad review.
I thought about that in terms of mystery writing. I mean, I can cogitate all kinds of things to, ways of doing somebody in. But if you put that down in a book, and then someone goes out and uses it, it happens with movies, and we're getting off track
sure.
here.
But, yeah, you can watch Forensic Files and all those places. And
now, is there anything parallel to this legislation in Wisconsin to protect kids going on at the federal level?
No, I think it's state by state, because they would be prosecuted in the state where any crime where the child lived. So each state has, that's why 39 states have, they provide religious exceptions to child abuse or neglect charges based on faith, and 19 states permit religion-based offenses to felony crimes against children.
What? No, What about the religions that use chemical
mushrooms
in their religion? Yeah, mushrooms and other things that are psychoactive. Usually there's a shaman as an intermediary. There are a whole bunch of different religions. Of course, American Indians.
Yeah, they've gotten the right to use peyote.
Both in North America and throughout the South. Yeah.
I think what adults want to do is totally different from what children. I mean, look at that case down with them in Texas where they took all those 400 children because they thought they were being abused by the Mormons. I mean, you know, they just swept right in. That hasn't even gone to trial yet. And it's kind of interesting, and that's kind of the I think, like Rita Swan says, such exceptions discriminate against a class of children, depriving them of their 14th Amendment rights to equal protection, and give a preference and an endorsement to a religious practice violating the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, because we're only protecting Christians who pray. If you are probably a Wiccan or a Satan worshiper or a Mormon or whatever.
Religions like Muslims.
If you want to marry your daughter off at 12, and does that supersede the legal age requirement for your state? I would think that most people consider that to be abuse.
They're tough things. It's not a simple answer.
It's not simple, and that's why most legislators don't do anything about it. It's easier to just let it go under the rug. But, these children, I mean, Kara Newman died a very painful death. It's not easy to die from diabetes. It's a very horrible way to die. And oftentimes these children do die from very treatable illnesses. There was one of the things I was reading was, and then this is kind of an interesting thing because, I don't know if any of you were at the Skeptics had a talk by James Carroll from the James Conway from the UW Pediatric Immunization, and he was talking about vaccinations and how Jenny McCarthy can go on Oprah, and all of a sudden you've got all these people that are not vaccinating their children for things like measles and mumps and diphtheria, and because they're afraid of the vaccines. And then we've got Bill Maher who is an atheist on one hand, but he's also this quack medical person on the other. One of the things with a group of faith-type healers was that they do not vaccinate their children either, and there'll be huge outbreaks of measles, red measles. When I was speaking to Dr. Carroll after Conway is his name, after his talk, my theory was that so many younger people have never had these illnesses. I mean, we're of the generation, most of us, where we all had measles and mumps and chicken pox, and we were all vaccinated for polio, and so these things have kind of flown by the new parents' radar. They just don't realize how devastating these illnesses can be,
especially in adults.
Yeah, and if you don't, that's the thing, is children are not vaccinated, well, then they just open it up for anybody else to get these illnesses, too.
There was chicken pox in an adult has a 3% mortality.
Mumps, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mumps are very devastating for adults, too.
I thought it was interesting that he said that there were 90% of the people vaccinated as a floor, and once you go below 80% of the population, then you really are opening up to epidemics, and that we are just, what did he say, we are 81% right now in the state of Wisconsin.
Right.
This isn't some foreign, this is the state of Wisconsin. So we are just teetering on the edge of where there's not a big enough pool of kids vaccinated to prevent the epidemics.
Great Britain has already teetered and had the problem.
They fell off.
In Dublin, they had an outbreak of tens of thousands of children had red measles. It was terrible. People don't realize how devastating. Children can become blind and deaf and mentally retarded from a case of red measles. It's preventable by a vaccine.
Now, parents are objecting mainly on religious grounds, or
fear of
Yeah, fear. It's a fear-based.
It's going to make them sick or something.
Well, there's been this whole thing about some of the shots causing autism, which has been debunked research-wise, but it's still out there so strongly in the popular image that people think they're protecting their children from becoming autistic by not vaccinating, whereas that was bunk. But if,
Dr. Conway,
they're laying them open. They think they're being good parents.
They do. Thimerosal was supposed to be the additive that was supposed to be in the preservative that's included in most vaccines. And he said, Dr. Conway said that they, in I think it was Denmark or some Scandinavian country, they removed thimerosal and autism went up. So he says, by rights, we should put it back in. Take the autism down.
Well,
but yeah.
Autism is going up all over because mild cases are being recognized.
Right. It's much more, it's more diagnosed. But then the other thing we thought was kind of interesting was in states that get reimbursed for children that have autism to the tune of like $8,000 per child per year, autism goes up. But in states like New Mexico, where it's, they don't get any more money, autism rates stay level. So there's a monetary kind of a reward for diagnosing them.
Yeah.
And but so yeah,
kids
the whole
been diagnosed as mentally retarded before they get diagnosed as autistic.
Oh, well, there's a lot of somatic paradoxes. Like, I don't believe in unidentified flying objects, but in a sense, I do believe in them because I believe they're unidentified. So there's that kind of logic in a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting where we, you know, when we look at this, that a parent that does chooses not to vaccinate their child isn't really held, you know, like isn't charged with abuse or neglect for not doing so. I mean, it's most cases are required by law, but you can get an exception for not wanting to vaccinate your children.
And you don't have to do anything but say,
I don't want to do it. It doesn't have to be based on religious beliefs or anything.
Private schools can refuse to take those children, and I think there's some movement in the public schools to say they can't come to school, but I don't think it's going to come up.
Not when you get 20% of the parents who aren't
vaccinated. There's been a lot of discussion about the swine flu vaccination, and in fact, I got a call from my son, you know, asking my great wisdom as to whether or not they should. I said, I think you'd be better off with anything that would reaction from vaccine than the alternative.
Yeah.
And especially this country seems to have an unusual number of very serious illnesses and deaths
with children.
Mm-hmm. And he was saying that in his child's school that there's a lot of parents that are not going to get the vaccination. And you know, I have concerns both ways. It's in the vaccine. It's not, you know, it's not been out there long. But hey, also there's
death is pretty powerful deterrent.
Well, yeah. It's just an accident of the calendar.
Right.
The virus wasn't ready in time to be in the seasonal flu shots.
Yeah.
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 They do. That's what this guy was talking about.
Yeah.
He said, you know, if
it came out in February.
If it hadn't come on when it did, it would have just been part of the seasonal vaccine and nobody would have paid any attention.
Yes, it
to
would, because the seasonal vaccine wasn't recommended for healthy kids, school-age kids,
before.
That's true. Whereas this one is. That's the primary group.
There were some people that I heard talking in my art class who, one of them's daughter's pregnant, and she said, well, you know, I'm really telling her she probably shouldn't get the vaccine. I said, are you nuts? Of course you should get the vaccine.
Yeah, there's been a number of women that have died very suddenly while pregnant and having...
Yeah, and it happened to be the day after the article was on the front page of the New York Times.
Oh, but that's kind of tricky because take rubella. Rubella in pregnant women consistently produces congenital abnormalities. But the vaccine is a live vaccine, and it can also do it. So you got to look at it one case at a time.
What happened to the old parties?
But this particular vaccine.
The what?
The parties of young, the diesel parties.
Oh,
that?
Yeah.
Yeah, people together.
Well, I don't know. They've talked about having swine flu parties, too, but the CDC has suggested not doing that.
The idea was before they became
childbearing age, they would all get the measles, they wouldn't have to worry about it.
No, that's
so if they had measles, then they invite all their little girlfriends, and they'd all get measles.
Well,
and,
we're so old that when our kids were growing up, they didn't have the measles vaccine yet, and when the case in our neighbors, we said, no, we bring our children over.
There's red measles, and then there's German measles, and German measles are the one that cause birth defects, and you can have a very, very light case of German measles, and it's not anywhere near the disease that red measles is, but it really affects a growing fetus. I know when my sister and I were growing up, my mother wasn't aware if we'd had it or not, and we could get the vaccine then. We were like 15 or something. And I think they can test you, though. They can do titers to see if you've had it.
But the titer was more than the vaccine.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, exactly true.
Another religious treatment that we haven't touched on yet is exorcism of demons. Is this something that the IRS
is going
pay
to pay for?
And would be covered?
Well, there was that one child in Milwaukee that was killed because the person, he was only 2 years old, and a large adult male laid on top of him and crushed him. I mean, he stopped breathing. And I don't know the outcomes of that case.
Do the priests charge when they come in to do this sort of thing? Or is this?
Should they get reimbursed for that? Well, yeah, it's kind of like, where do we draw the line on what we're going to, you know... They're already looking at the cost of this medical care, you know.
And if it's legal not to treat a child who's going to die, and reimburse the people for praying over them, how different is it?
The Carrie Hatch Amendment language is really pretty broad. It says any religious or spiritual health care, if it's eligible for an IRS deduction.
So it sounds like get the demons out of that kid, you could be reimbursed.
If it's, I don't know what the IRS laws say about
that. Well, are we talking about a Roman Catholic that's doing an exorcism?
Not the one that you talked about. That was an evangelical.
Yeah.
Some sort.
Mm. I think the minister in that case got 30 months in prison, or whoever the quote unquote minister was. Yeah, he did go to prison for that.
Why is it again that the faith healing and the praying over a sick child is not considered practicing medicine without a license? Why does that not apply?
Oh, that's a good point, since they charge for it.
Well, I know Rita Swan talked about the Christian Science Church position when she went to court over the death of her child, and they said, well, we never claimed to be medical tutors.
That's why I said they don't have prayer malpractice. They want it both ways. They want to be reimbursed, but then they don't want to have the responsibility
lot of faith healers that you don't pay them. What you do is you give quote donations unquote to the church.
Yeah, they don't have a fee chart.
No, but they give you a good hint about what you should donate.
But if you owe your exorcist.
But we expect you to donate X amount of money.
No, but just pay him first when you're behind up the bills because he can have you repossessed.
I don't know, people are funny, and not necessarily just right-wing people, but left-wing people, too. There was a rumor quite a few years ago that children were getting brain tumors from high-voltage power lines, and it made a little bit of sense because there was a electrostatic...
Yeah, and cell phone.
But they made a long survey, a study, and they said there's no truth to that. Mm-hmm. Now, you think, oh, thank God, I'm certainly glad that that's not true. But they wouldn't believe it. They said, no, they seem to want to have children getting brain tumors. Mm-hmm. And why don't you just accept when it's a study and it's not true? Well,
we get calls at the office.
They're caused by big companies and these little children. But you can't, people get said that in their mind and it really doesn't make any difference. You don't believe it. If
just
it
what the autism and
I do have the impression that, I haven't read a control study, that there's an increased incidence of brain tumors in young adults. just from my clinical experience and how many young adults we get in hospice with brain tumors.
But this was specifically.
But not young adults, maybe from.
This was specifically in.
We don't know what it's.
Well, I mean, there's that whole story about cell phones and brain tumors now.
Yeah.
So.
All sorts of stuff going on. Yeah.
Well, there's a new virus.
Well, they did those studies at the guy at the University of Wisconsin on chemicals that you use to look at, you know, to insecticide pesticides in the lawn, and they apparently have just been studied prior to that chemical by chemical, as opposed to a chemical soup.
Uh-huh.
And when they studied it, when this guy studied him as a chemical soup, they were getting, like, the male mice all had female traits and that sort of thing. I mean, that because it turns out they were endocrine
toxicology
disruptors.
Adults,
so I think probably it's not the high wires that's the problem. It's the stuff you're putting on your
plate. There's a logical reason for what you say, and that is in the presence of other chemicals that are detoxified by the same mechanism, their very presence may busy the enzymes and saturate the ability to detoxify.
The liver can only detoxify so much of it at a time.
And your priorities in the liver are about which gets it first, and we don't understand all that stuff.
Right, exactly. So that's, you know, there's some good studies and good logic.
But it's pretty hopeless because I put hot sauce and soy sauce on my food. And maybe separately they're okay, and maybe somebody else puts mayonnaise and ketchup, and ketchup and mayonnaise, and you can just make all these combinations. You can't study them all. You can't study them all.
They probably
aren't endocrine disruptors. Like
well, I know, but I'm thinking the people like something I know something about it, the endless combinations. That you could study.
The point is also, he's right. I mean, at the office, we will get calls, and that's one of my favorites was the one whose boyfriend was killing her through rays from the TV set. Mm-hmm. And she had multiple people come in and measure the TV set with no other problem, but no matter what you said to this woman about no evidence, and you have to actually find evidence before we can do anything, she would just keep muttering that her boyfriend was killing her with a TV set. No matter what you said about that, you could just sit there for two or 3 hours talking with this woman. You need evidence before we can do anything. You need evidence before we can do anything.
No, but all you got is to get rid of the boyfriend at the TV set.
Yeah, get a different TV.
Well,
that's kind of the tinfoil hat people.
There are many kinds of superstition in our society.
Well, there is a new virus just came out that science isn't even in the medical literature yet.
Oh, we don't want to know about it.
No. Oh, but apparently it's quite prevalent in people with chronic fatigue syndrome.
Oh, okay.
It occurs in 4% of the general population, including those who have early onset brain tumors. So this might be a new thing that's going to require a new vaccine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was an art. I think it was Science Times or something. And I saw that.
Yeah, there was something in.
And when it comes to flu shots, it is something that's about a year old, and it hasn't even hit the medical literature yet. And that is, there's a new vaccine under development that could be loosely called a jack of all strains vaccine because it affects all viruses. But it doesn't totally prevent the disease. It just makes it into a one-day mild aches and pains, slight fever sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be initially proposed as something you give to the entire population early in life. And when there's a threat of something like swine flu, you just give everybody a booster shot, kind of like a tetanus booster.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say if it's really true, that it makes influenza into such a mild disease, ultimately, we won't need seasonal flu shots, we'll just take it as a thing.
That'd be cool.
And so within a year or so, that's probably going to be on the market, and you're going to hear about it.
Huh. One of the things this was an isthmus, the person was, Lyme's disease was misdiagnosed until she had. She was on a farm, so she finally started giving herself an antibiotic and got better. but she had two of the tests for Lyme's disease came back negative. But they said in the article that they think that MS, Alzheimer's, a lot of these different diseases that we call by these other names could actually be Lyme's disease. Because Lyme's disease is very devastating.
The Lyme disease can mimic some of those things.
Well, usually they test you for those things, and that's not what you have. What they're saying is a lot of these people that have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's and MS and a lot of other things, they actually have Lyme's disease.
I guess there's still a lot of false negatives testing for Lyme disease. I can understand attack almost any organ of the mm-hmm. body.
Especially nervous
including
cells.
The brain, the nervous cells. The heart and mm-hmm. various...
And they had a vaccine for a while, but they took it off the market.
I have two or three friends who are permanently disabled.
Partially disabled
by this.
And I don't
memory
know
loss.
Anybody who walks around in the woods with their pants in their socks.
Yeah.
And yet it's good advice.
And I bet you everybody here knows somebody that's had Lyme disease.
I have Lyme disease. My wife's had Lyme disease.
Yeah, see, we all know somebody.
Did
you put that in your book?
Yeah, no, not in the book, but I wrote it someplace. But if you read the recommendations for Lyme disease, it's just ludicrous. They say don't go in wooded areas or where there's tall grass. Stay in a house. There's supposed to be a thing around your house about 3 feet all the way around. This rock, because then the
ticks can't get through.
So you're supposed to tuck your pants leg in, and you can look at any one of these Audubon magazines or wherever they are. And here's some guy out there lecturing, and everybody's standing there. Nobody has got their pants in their socket. Yet we all sit here and agree on what a terrible season is. Now, what the hell's wrong there?
Yeah.
You put your pants in your socket? That looks super nerdy.
Yeah, it's much better to get Lyme disease and look cool.
That's very tipsy.
Yeah, when you look at that L.L. Bean catalog, there's nobody with their pants tucked into their socks.
Well, the best reason for us putting our pants in our socks is so we don't get our pants squeezing in the bicycle chain.
Let's wind up with any final comments on religion and healthcare.
Yeah, religion and healthcare. Well, stay tuned for what the federal government is going to do. You can probably still contact Cole and Feingold and say that you're dubious about the prayer, the carry patch part.
And also Baldwin. So if they mix up the two bills, it doesn't get stuck.
So it doesn't get stuck in there. There's no other prayer thing in any of the other bills, though. The other Senate bill doesn't have it. The only one that does is the Baucus bill, the finance one. And I would definitely encourage everybody to at least attempt to take see if we can't do some work towards this. With Wisconsin, the fact whenever I call anybody on a federal level, they all knew Wisconsin had this coming up. And so,
well, that's a good sign.
Yeah, so that they were aware of it. And so if we can be, if we can make it 38 states instead of 39, that would be good. I mean, it makes us, maybe it just sends a, that we're going to, what it does is it gives prosecutors more ammo for, because most of them won't even take these cases right now. So.
Yeah, Julie, thank you very much.
Yeah.